Coming of that final door through which no traveler returns. Our spirits reach out to you, Bantu, Zulu, Xhosa, Boer. We think of you and your son of Africa, your father, your one more wonder of the world. We send our souls to you as you reflect upon your David, armed with a mere stone, facing down the mighty Goliath, your man of strength, Gideon, emerging triumphant, although born into the brutal embrace of apartheid, scarred by the savage atmosphere of racism, unjustly imprisoned in the bloody maws of South African dungeons. Would the man survive? Could the man survive? His answer strengthened men and women around the world. In the Alamo in San Antonio, Texas, on the Golden Gate Bridge in San Francisco, in Chicago's Loop, in New Orleans Mardi Gras, in New York City's Times Square, we watched as the hope of Africa sprang through the prison's doors, his stupendous heart intact, his gargantuan will, hale and hearty. He had not been crippled by brutes, nor was his passion for the rights of human beings diminished by 27 years of imprisonment. Even here in America, we felt the cool, refreshing breeze of freedom when Nelson Mandela took the seat of presidency in his country, where formerly he was not even allowed to vote. We were enlarged by tears of pride as we saw Nelson Mandela's former prison guards invited courteously by him to watch from the front rows his inauguration. We saw him accept the world's award in Norway with the grace and gratitude of the Solon in ancient Roman courts, and the confidence of African chiefs from ancient royal stools. No sun outlasts its sunset, but will rise again and bring the dawn. Yes, Mandela's day is done, yet we, his inheritors, will open the gates wider for reconciliation, and we will respond generously to the cries of blacks and whites, Asian, Hispanics, the poor who live piteously on the floor of our planet. He has offered us understanding. We will not withhold forgiveness, even from those who do not ask. Nelson Mandela's day is done. We confess it in tearful voices, yet we lift our own to say thank you. Thank you, our Gideon. Thank you, our David. Our great courageous man, we will not forget you. We will not dishonor you. We will remember and be glad that you lived among us, that you taught us, and that you loved us all.
Maya Angelou, reciting her poem, His Day Is Done, a tribute to the late Nelson Mandela. They first met in 1962. When Mandela was on a secret trip through Africa. You can go to our website to see highlights and excerpts from past Democracy Now! Interviews about Nelson Mandela, including my interview with filmmaker Yoruba Richen about her film Promised Land, which takes a critical look at land reform and racial reconciliation in the new South Africa. To get a copy of today's show, you can go to our website at democracynow.org. Democracy Now! Is produced by Mike Burke, Renee Feltz, Aaron Mate, Nermin Sheikh, Steve Martinez, Sam Alkoff, Hani Massoud, Robbie Karen, Dina Guzder, Amy Littlefield, Cassandra Lazette, Zara Messiah Rhodes, Tarina Nadura. Mike DeFilippo and Miguel Nogueira are our engineers. Special thanks to Becca Staley and Julie Crosby and Hugh Grant and Jessica Lee and John Wallach and Vesta Godars. And to our camera crew, to John Randolph and Kieran Krug-Meadows, Carlo De Jesus, as well as Phil Randall. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks so much for joining us. Democracy Now! Is a listener-supported grassroots global news hour. You make it possible when you donate at democracynow.org. Thank you so much.
On your WUSB concert billboard for Sunday, December 8th, Hugh Cornwell will be at the Highline Ballroom, Manhattan, 8 p.m. Pink will be at the Barclays Center in Brooklyn, 7:30. The Sunday Street Acoustics Series welcomes Ellis Paul and Rebecca Loeb, 2 p.m. at the University Cafe, right here, Stony Brook University. Darlene Love will be at the Landmark on Main Street, Port Washington, 7 p.m. Mattis Yathu, Festival of Light, will be at Webster Hall, New York City, 8 p.m. The Spirituality of Paul Simon, performed by Jax Waterfall, written by Dwight Lee Walter, will be at the Congregational Church of Patchogue, 7 p.m. The Paul Brusker Quartet will be at Treme Blues and Jazz Bar in Islip, 7 p.m. Your concert billboard for Monday, December 9th. The Mostly Barbershop, an a cappella show, will be at the Dix Hills Performing Arts Center in Dix Hills, 7:30. Rod Stewart will be at Madison Square Garden, 7:30. Your concert billboard for Monday, December 10th. Demon Fest, She-Wolf, will be at the Diamond Club in Ronkonkoma, 6 p.m. Mattis Yathu's Festival Light will be at the Space in Westbury, 8 p.m. Ashford & Simpson's Sugar Bar welcomes Danny Keen at 9. Looking ahead to Wednesday, December 11th, Cassandra House will be at BBQ in Patchogue.
Who's performing in the area and where? Listen here for WUSB Concert Billboard or go online to WUSB.fm and see what's coming up for months ahead. So go ahead, enjoy the show.
And you are listening to Nobody because the microphone's not working. Okay, do we have a working microphone? Would be helpful, wouldn't it? All right, you are listening to WUSB Stony Brook. It's 3 minutes after 6 o'clock, and already this hour is going so well. It's time for Off the Wall. Thank you. Okay, I'm going to have to hit the mic every time I want to speak, apparently. That's the only way to get things to work around here, is to hit them. Well, as I was saying, we played the entire theme because we couldn't speak. Well, at least the CD player is working. But, you know, I really wanted to speak over the theme. I like doing that. And instead, we played the entire thing without me saying a word. But you know what? I can just play it again. Speak over it. Because that's the nature of radio. You can control things and do all sorts of tricks. The one trick I'd like to do today, though, is take phone calls, because we haven't done that in such a long time. And it appears for the first time in a dog's age, we're not raising funds, so we'll be able to do that. And I would feel a lot better hearing from listeners, to be honest. Because haven't really heard a whole lot of voices lately. And that's important. It's important to get through these dark months of winter. Yeah, we had our first snowfall today, although it wasn't that much. The way people were worried and preparing and panicking, you would think it was another blizzard, but it was just basically a dusting. Doesn't mean people aren't flipping their cars all over the place, which they are doing, literally. There are Jeep Cherokees flying in the air, because I don't know what people do to get that effect, but it just happens as soon as you have a slight bit of a frost or dusting of snow or anything on the ground. People just lose control. But, yeah, this is Emmanuel. This is Off the Wall. Flying solo tonight, I guess, because I think Finn is doing production in the other room. Kyle's out in Seattle. And, well, we've got some things to talk about. Today is kind of an historic day. The Nelson Mandela ceremony taking place throughout the course of the day. And, wow, what a lot of dignitaries showing up to this thing. I mean, there was an article about Air Force One. All the presidents that are on Air Force One. Actually, how many presidents were on Air Force One? I know Obama was. I know George W. Bush was. I'm not sure. Jimmy Carter, was he on that one? I think he was. I know Bill Clinton went separately because Hillary Clinton was also on Air Force One, and apparently the two can't be in the same plane or something. I don't know. There's some kind of regulation. But there were all manner of high-level officials. They said it was basically the only time anything like this has ever happened with this many important people on the airplane. So I imagine they would have to keep its location a little bit under wraps. And I just wonder how many people keep track of this sort of thing. When Kyle and I were over in Ireland, we were hanging out with this terrific guy, Sean, in Northern Ireland. And by the way, we will get to those shows at some point. We record a lot of audio, and we have some great material. Just a question of putting it all together. And yeah. But at one point, we were... where were we? We climbed a mountain or something, or we were on a hill. We took a long walk, and it was raining, and very green. Why did we do that? You know, I don't remember why we took that walk. I think it was just to get a good scenery of Belfast. But while we were trudging around, I was carrying something very heavy, too. I recall that. What was I carrying? I was carrying, I guess, camera equipment. Yeah. Well, any event, and thanks, Sean, for carrying that on the way back. Although I could have done it. I could have. It just was really, really heavy. But he had this app on his smartphone, which was really incredible. You pointed at the sky. Well, you pointed at an airplane that's in the sky. And within seconds, it reads back to you what airplane that is, where it's coming from, where it's going. See, we were overlooking an airport, so we were seeing planes flying in. And at one point, he said, I wonder where that plane's coming from, and held his phone up, pushed the button, and said, oh, that's the 552 from Manchester. Or something like, I was blown away by this. I mean, I had seen an app that allowed you to point your phone at the sky or even at the ground, and it would tell you what stars were there in that particular part of the sky, or if you went all the way through the Earth or was on the other side of the Earth. And stars, planets, you name it, it would give you information on that. That was amazing enough. But this was truly incredible. I looked it up in this country, and apparently, in the United States, it's different. You can't just do that. You can't just point your phone up at an airplane and find out where it's coming from or where it's going. You have to wait 5 minutes. Sort of takes away the whole thrill of it. I don't know if it's a technological reason or a security reason or whatnot. I imagine if you pointed your phone at the sky and you saw Air Force One with all the presidents on it, I guess that would be a security issue if you had, you know, a heat-seeking missile or something. But most people don't, and that doesn't happen very often anyway as far as all the presidents traveling together. So I just thought it would be really cool to have that, but apparently you can't, at least not in that form. But boy, the technology, you know, it's moving so fast. I mean, to be able to do that, to be able to just point at something and know, based on its signals, where it's actually coming from, that is cool. That is really cool. What was interesting, though, in Belfast was that we were pointing it at a plane that seemed to be literally following us around. It was circling. It was circling in the sky. And we were up there for maybe 45 minutes. That plane just kept circling. And we were pointing up at that plane, wondering, you know, what it was, and it wasn't identified. And I think we were not far away from an army base or something military, so it might have been related to that somehow, or it might have been following us. Although following us in the sky, it doesn't seem like the most efficient way to do that. And I don't know why they'd be following us in the first place, but who knows? So yeah, that was pretty damn cool. Being able to do that. You know, maybe it was a drone. I think it was a bigger plane than a drone, but it's possible. And we have to start getting used to drones because they're going to be part of our lives. And it's not a damn thing we can do about it, apparently. There's a town in Colorado, though. Yeah, there's lots of towns in Colorado, but and they're all up to something. But this town in particular piqued my interest. Listen to what Philip Steele, who's a resident of Deer Trail, Colorado. You know what they do in Deer Trail, Colorado. They hunt deer, don't they? Yeah, they sure do. Well, they're ready to fight for Old West values over there in Deer Trail. And Philip Steele, that's a good name, too. My name's Philip Steele. I hunt deer. And Philip Steele has a gun, you better believe it, and he feels threatened by drones. So, what he's proposing to do when he sees an unmanned aircraft, Steele points his weapon to the sky and says, "I am proposing to shoot it down." And undoubtedly he says it in an accent that I can't possibly replicate, but probably would really resonate much better than the way I said it. Now, Deer Trail has a population of 598 people. All of them are angry, and they don't like drones, and probably all have multiple weapons. They're going to vote today, actually. So if anyone's in Deer Trail, the odds of one of our listeners being in Deer Trail, it'd be 598 people. If one person there listened to the show, they could report back to us. But I doubt any of our listeners have ever actually even been to Deer Trail or maybe even heard of it. They're going to vote on a measure that would allow its residents to hunt for federal drones and shoot them down. Don't you just love it when towns pass these little ordinances and measures? There should be a network just devoted to this. Now, the FAA recently announced plans to create 6 drone test sites around the country. None of them have been publicly listed. And it plans to allow, and this is serious, listen to this. It plans to allow widespread use of domestic drones in 2015. Just about a little over a year away. Widespread use of domestic drones. Think about what that could mean. And yeah, we've all heard the Amazon stories. Those are nice drones, maybe. Delivering little packages to you and whatnot. But they're not going to be the only ones in the sky. You know, you're going to have FedEx in there, probably USPS, who knows who else. But the military certainly will be up there amongst them. And then all kinds of apps are going to become interesting on phones, believe me, to identify the drones and where they're from, assuming they identify themselves at all. Drones, as many of us know, are cheaper to operate than helicopters. They can be used for all sorts of tasks, like monitoring crops and livestock and assessing building damage and killing people if necessary. But getting back to Steele, he's not per se against drones. He recognizes they can be helpful in some situations, such as a search and rescue effort. They just found that family in Nevada that somehow got lost in the mountains. Well, it's not hard to get lost in the mountains, but sub-zero temperature. They're all found today, all safe. I don't know if drones helped or if dogs helped or what, but certainly there is good that can be used, that can be fulfilled by this technology. But Steele maintains that the drones don't belong in his backyard. Well, you know, they're not in your backyard. They're way above your backyard. They're looking at your backyard. And maybe assessing things that you're not supposed to have in your backyard, like a swimming pool. Did you file a permit for that? No? Well, you got to pay taxes. You know, they already do that. They've been doing that for years here in Brookhaven, Brookhaven Town in Suffolk County. They have been using Google Maps, or Google Earth, the tax assessor people, and they literally go through neighborhoods and say, well, look, this person added on to their home. This person has improved their lot in life. Now it's up to us to destroy it and charge them a whole lot of money for doing that without getting the proper okay. And yeah, they use these tools that are out there. And these tools are made by corporate America, by the Microsofts, by the Googles. So many more. Interestingly enough, the same companies that took out full-page ads in newspapers earlier this week, requesting that the U.S. government rein in the NSA and stop spying on everybody. Well, you know what? You guys make it so easy for them to do that. They use your technology. How about that? How about the fact that people are advertising where they are to anybody willing to listen? And believe me, there are a lot of government agencies and corporations willing to listen. If there wasn't a Facebook, all sorts of personal information would not be in the hands of the NSA. It's kind of, I think, hypocritical to chastise the NSA when you made it possible in the first place. Of course, they would always be trying to find a way, but you make it so easy for them. And no, the privacy restrictions were not sufficient to protect people against prying eyes of people and entities they didn't know. Oh boy, did I go on a tangent? Okay, so let's get back to our friend over in Deer Trail, Philip Steele. What has me fired up, he says, it's trespassing. It doesn't belong there. Yes, it's privacy, but that's only one part of it. Who's going to be flying these drones? Now, the ordinance specifies the kinds of weapons and ammunition residents could use and puts a bounty on recovered parts. Get this, $25 for the fuselage or wing, $100 for a whole drone that has U.S. government markings. This is like, it's like we're in Iran. You know, I'll shoot down a drone and hold it up to the cameras and jump up and down and cheer and do whatever else people do. Except you're in Colorado, capturing drones. I love it. This makes me enthusiastic. I'm almost feel like joining them. You guys make guns cool because you're shooting U.S. drones out of the sky in your own country. Anyway, the idea has found some support in Deer Trail, which, by the way, it takes up less than 1 square mile. So I guess it'd be fairly easy for drones to just avoid that particular hot box or cinder box, whatever you call that. I would shoot a drone down if it's peering in my window, scanning me, and it's within elevation where I can nail it, said Robert Copley, a resident. So he's on top of it. But you know what? Not everybody in town is in favor of this. Of the 598 people, there are a few naysayers. Aren't there always a few naysayers? When you have 598 people, there's always somebody. It doesn't go along. Daniel Domonsky says, it's a federal offense to destroy government property. And on top of that, it's a ridiculous thing and embarrassing the town. I think we have a spy. Yeah, I think we got somebody who's communicating with the enemy. No doubt he's being questioned in a warehouse right now by concerned citizens. Actually, the FAA is keeping a close watch on the special election in Deer Trail. It issued a statement or a warning, whatever you want to call it. Shooting at an unmanned aircraft could result in criminal or civil liability, just as would firing at a manned airplane, it read. First of all, I'd like to know, how do you know for sure that it's unmanned? Just the size? Is that the only thing that, because drones can be, some can be big, some can be tiny. How do you know you're not shooting down little Tommy's model airplane, you know, or someone's quadcopter that they just got as a present? But anyway, you can bet Mr. Steele will be shooting at drones if he sees one. There are many things that are illegal, but the United States federal government declared war on us. This is our response. Colorado's turning into a very interesting place. Of course, we also have the whole pot thing going on in Colorado. They're calling it Black Wednesday, when recreational marijuana goes on sale legally on January 1st. Denver officials are actually worried that the city's retail shops won't be anywhere close to meeting demand. I never thought I'd hear the day when a city is worried that there isn't enough pot, you know, but we have come a long way. And yeah, here we are at that stage where we have to get more marijuana into the stores because the demand is just too great. If we have 10 stores open, we could have people camping out overnight with cash in their pocket, said Councilman Charlie Brown. Really? Wow, the story just keeps getting weirder and weirder. How is the industry, how is the police department going to work together? More than 100 stores are waiting to have applications approved by the city and state. That process involves multiple inspections and a public hearing. A small fraction of that number are likely to be open by 8 a.m. on January 1st, when legal sales for recreational marijuana begin. Employees from the city's Department of Excise and Licenses estimated that Denver will have around 12 legal retail outlets in operation. City officials are worried about the ability of those stores to handle the expected crowds, which they said will be supplemented by marijuana tourists. Marijuana tourists. I can hardly wait to see some of the packages that are being offered online for them. That's going to be fun. What airline is going to tap into that market? Marijuana tourists. Yeah, they'll be arriving on chartered buses. VW buses, by the way. There's a whole fleet of them ready to go. Security is also a concern, as marijuana can only be purchased with cash. Why is that? Why is that? That's not part of the ordinance, is it? I mean, I actually, and I'll admit this openly, I put marijuana on my credit card when I was in Amsterdam. One time, yes. I just wanted to do it. I wanted to have it on my credit card. It didn't really show up as anything other than I was in a cafe, but it still was pretty cool. A representative from the medical marijuana industry said he knows Denver is going to be under enormous scrutiny on New Year's Day. It's very true that the whole world is watching, said Michael Elliott, who noted that shoppers may be confused when they're turned away from the vast majority of medical marijuana dispensaries that aren't licensed to sell recreational pot. It's very intense right now. After voters approved the measure to legalize marijuana in November of 2012, Colorado spent the next 6 months developing regulations for consumption, dealing with advertising restrictions, childproof packaging, THC limits, rules for driving while high. Clearly, we are charting new territory. Other states haven't been through the process. That's according to Colorado Governor John Hickenlooper. That's a great name, John Hickenlooper. Wow. Recreational marijuana is really a completely new entity. And 7 months later, lawmakers are still deep in the weed. Deep in the weeds? Really? That's how we're going to phrase this. Okay. That comes from Time Magazine, by the way. Clever guys. It's pure cloth, Denver Councilman Albus Brooks said to Time. We're starting from scratch. Pure cloth. Okay. He introduced a measure on Monday that would decriminalize possession for adults ages 18 to 20, which was approved by a special committee focused on marijuana issues. And that committee also killed a bill which would have made it illegal to openly smoke pot on private property within 1,000 feet of any school, which is pretty silly. So, yeah, we're seeing history. We're seeing real history being made, and Colorado seems to be the place where things are going on. Seattle, of course, being another one. I know if Kyle were here, he'd be filling us in on where that all stands. But I'm sure you'll be seeing very similar type of things going on there. And you know what? This is just the beginning. We're watching Washington. We're watching Colorado. And we're taking notes. And the success of what happens over there is going to basically dictate what happens in the rest of the country. And dare I say, the rest of the world. Things are changing. I know people always want things to change faster, but they don't. They change at the pace that they change. And we either accept that or we give up and it goes the other direction. So I'm happy. I'm happy seeing this happen. This is a good change. Gay marriage, that was a good change too. And you saw how that avalanched once it began. Same thing's going to happen here. So that's where we stand as far as that goes. Here's another change today. And, of course, this is something you'll be hearing about in the news all over the place. Another famous handshake. Did you catch this? The Republicans are already upset at this. But after Obama gave his speech in South Africa today for the Nelson Mandela Memorial, who was waiting backstage but Raul Castro, leader of Cuba? He shook his hand. He was right there. He actually seemed very friendly. Whole thing lasted about 5 seconds, but it was cordial. It's what you do. But the Republicans are they would have rather that he just smack him across the face or something and just walk on by. So look for a fallout for something as innocuous as a cordial handshake at a memorial service, because that's the game they play. It could open up doors. That would be great if it did. It would be amazing if a Nelson Mandela event actually precipitated something like that. You know, I remember I actually was at the Yankee Stadium event where Nelson Mandela appeared in New York. And I remember he stood out there and he declared himself a Yankee, which I thought was pretty funny. But it just commanded such respect and attention. And it's incredible how you can do that by being low-key, by being measured in your tone, by being conciliatory and forgiving. That is really what I think Nelson Mandela will be remembered for more than anything else, is being a giant as far as being able to forgive people that so many of us would not be able to forgive. But his ability to do that was a model for the entire country. And look at how things have changed. Yes, things are not perfect. There's still a lot of injustice, a lot of inequity, but you'd be a fool to say things have not changed in South Africa. They've changed tremendously. And with a minimum amount of bloodshed. And there are so many places in the world that can look at that and say, this is what we should be doing. This is how we should be talking to each other. And if there were Nelson Mandela's in other regions, this world would be in such better shape. So maybe some will be inspired. Maybe there'll be more handshakes. Maybe some progress will be made. You gotta hold out hope. You really do. And it's hard, you know, especially when it's gloomy and dark outside and cold and everyone's got seasonal affective disorder, and I'm feeling it too. But you got to hang in there, because things do get better. Perspectives change, and what you see as reality one day is completely different the next. Okay, you know, where was I going with all that? I was going back to South Africa because I wanted to, I've never been to South Africa, actually. I would like to go there. But I was going back to South Africa on this show because I wanted to bring up something that really was an injustice, an unbelievable injustice. Hi, Finn.
Well, hi.
Well, you're barging in rather late.
I'm sorry.
41 minutes after the hour?
I know. Well, I figured to make an appearance.
Is there a late-breaking news item that you have?
No, there is not.
Is there something in that package for me?
Or? No, there is not.
All right. We're not still raising money, right?
Not to my knowledge.
Good, okay, because we're going to try to take phone calls.
That's right.
Let me give the number out, 631-632-6901. I will go into delay in just a moment. But I wanted to let people know about this, because this is crazy, and I think, Finn, you'll find it's crazy too. Remember there was a platinum mine strike in South Africa. I think it was a year ago last summer, summer of 2012. There was a massacre. There was a massacre of these miners by the police. And what was crazy about that, in addition to the massacre being crazy in and of itself, was that 270 miners were then charged with the murders of their striking colleagues. They were charged under this law dating from the apartheid era that said they had a common purpose in the murder of their coworkers. And it was just, I think it was so insanely crazy that it did not last very long, this miscarriage of justice. But what we saw last week in New York was something incredibly similar. Now, there was an unarmed, emotionally disturbed man shot at by the police as he was lurching around traffic near Times Square in September. He has been charged with assault on the theory that he was responsible for bullet wounds suffered by two bystanders, according to an indictment that was unsealed last Wednesday. Now, the man created a disturbance on September 14th. He waded into traffic at 42nd Street and 8th Avenue and threw himself into the path of oncoming cars. A curious crowd grew because this is New York and people generally congregate to see things like this.
That's how we are.
Exactly. Now, police officers arrived and they tried to, like, move him, 250-pound guy, into... I guess into a particular area. They saw him reach into his pants pocket, and two officers said they thought he was pulling a gun. They opened fire, but they missed him and they hit two nearby women instead. And they finally subdued the guy by knocking him down with a taser. But basically, how many times have we seen this happen where cops are shooting at somebody and they wind up hitting the wrong people? Because, you know, admittedly, it's not the easiest thing in the world to do. I know that, which is why you don't do it very often, and you certainly don't do it with crowds. Mm-hmm. And to me, that kind of thing is just incredibly unprofessional. Now, okay, he's reaching into his pocket because he might have you don't actually see a gun. He's not actually pointing a gun at you. I don't think you have the right to fire at him at all, based on what you think might be happening in the next few seconds.
Well, I think the problematic argument in this situation is that if you played this out, the more mistakes the police made, the more you, as the right or wrong target of the police, would be liable for their mistakes.
Mm-hmm.
Right? The more people they struck, you'd be liable for those. And if they killed someone, you'd be guilty of murder.
The cop?
No.
Oh, this guy.
The person, right. The person they are trying to apprehend or shoot. They'd be guilty of murder because in other words, the worse the police officer's skills are,
uh-huh,
the greater the charge against the person they're trying to apprehend.
You see, they tried this tactic on us in school. They said, don't push, fire alarms or call in fake emergencies because you'll be killing somebody else because the cops won't be there for them when their house burns down or something like that. It's cause and effect. Okay, I can see it, but it's not really the same thing as actually killing these people yourself or burning down their house. It's basically doing something irresponsible and causing something else to happen.
Right.
But in this particular case, you know, this guy, first of all, had some kind of mental problem.
Right.
And the cops need to be able to deal with that. And the way to deal with that is not to shoot somebody you don't understand who's creating a disturbance.
Right.
Even if you think that he might turn violent, until he actually attacks you, you have no cause to do that. And you certainly have no cause to fire at other people that aren't even involved, which is what you do when you fire into crowds.
Right.
So this guy was arrested on misdemeanor charges of menacing, drug possession, resisting arrest. I still don't understand that charge. Who doesn't resist arrest? Who embraces arrest? You know, it's like, go, arrest
me. Some people
me.
Must seek it out.
And when you do that, they arrest you for saying, come and arrest me. They'll do that too. The Manhattan District Attorney's Office persuaded a grand jury to charge this guy with assault, a felony carrying a maximum sentence of 25 years. The defendant is the one that created the situation that injured innocent bystanders. So it's a real stretch. And it's similar to what I just read in South Africa. And I think, you got to have a stronger case against somebody than that.
Right.
So we'll see where that goes. I just thought that needed to be mentioned. You know what? I'm not going to delay. And hopefully we'll get some phone calls. 631-632-6901. And forgive me if I mess this up because I haven't gone into delay in quite a while because we haven't been taking phone calls in quite a while.
Hello, Long Island. This is Marley Hornick from Marley's Angels, and you are listening to WUSB in Stony Brook.
And here we are in delay, and I just hope that went smoothly because, well, it's important that our listeners be able to hear us. 631-632-6901. If we still have any listeners left. Finn, did you make it into delay okay?
I'm holding on.
Oh, look at you. Wow, you didn't fare so well.
No, I'm a little stretched out.
Oh, boy. Okay, well, fortunately, this is radio, so we'll just do the best we can. Yeah, you see, there's no listeners left. Okay, there's one. 631-632-6901. Good evening. You're on Off the Wall.
Good evening, Emmanuel.
It's Bobson from Bulgaria.
Yes.
You stuck with us during the years of fundraising that we've been doing.
Well, months, weeks, whatever.
All right, a long time.
Did you listen to the tribute speech that the Reverend Tutu made last night before the memorial for Mandela?
I did not.
Well, in that speech, he said something interesting. Do you know how he called Jimmy Carter, Bill Clinton, George W. Bush, and Barack Obama?
What did he call them?
He called them three presidents of the United States.
Well, I mean, they are all still called president, but obviously they're not all president at the same time.
Well, yeah, but he called them three presidents. That's Jimmy Carter, Bill Clinton, George W. Bush, and Barack Obama.
Oh, I see what you're saying. There's actually four people there. so who is he leaving out?
Well, I just thought it's nice. It was interesting to hear him say that.
Well, okay, there's a couple of possibilities here. A, he made a mistake. B, he's referring to former presidents and neglected to say the word former.
Oh, he didn't say former.
Yeah.
Anyhow, it was just...
It gets confusing when there's that many presidents standing in the same place, you know?
Yeah, I know.
But still, I mean, this was probably the one of the biggest memorial events in our history. I can't recall.
Oh, I can imagine that would be the case, yes.
I mean, Princess Diana, John Paul II, perhaps. Both of which, by the way, I don't know if you heard this, but there's some jackball in, I think, South Carolina, some sheriff who refuses to let the flag fly at half-mast because that should only be for Americans. And, you know, you're going to hear about people like this that are just...
First I hear of it.
Are ignorant and closed-minded. And, of course, we did have the flag at half-mast for Diana and for Pope John Paul. So it's nonsense to make this into some kind of nationalistic issue.
It's silly, and I am... it's the first I hear of it, and I don't see how it passes for anything these days, but it's sad to know that there are still people like that around us.
Yes, and there always will be. We just have to
move
forward.
Well, let's hope always would not be the case, but yeah.
If there weren't people to argue with, I think we'd lose sight of what we were arguing for. Oh, that's a good quote.
Yeah, but that's not...
Someone tweet that. That's good.
I just wrote that down.
I just said that. Oh, wow. That's kind of cool. And no one else has said that yet, I don't think.
Well,
anything else? Anything new with you, Bobson? Are you going to CCC?
You mean 30C3? Yes, I hope so.
The Chaos Congress. Yeah, I don't think I can make it. I really would like to make it, but you know how work is, and you know how expenses are. It's just too much, too soon.
Oh, well.
Miracles are possible, I suppose, but right now I have to say probably not. And I really would love to see the new place in Hamburg. I really would.
The new place is excellent compared to the Berlin.
Well, the Berlin place was pretty excellent, so wow.
Well, Berlin was excellent, but in terms of size, the Hamburg place is, I'd say, 3 to 4 times larger.
Well, I saw a picture. I don't know if this is a joke or what. I saw a picture of the Network Operations Center, and it looked like the command place for NASA. They were launching things to Mars. Is that really what the Network Operations Center for this conference looks like?
Well, I didn't get a good look of it last year, but I wouldn't be surprised. Although I think the NASA place is larger in terms of size.
Yeah, but they probably have more bandwidth in Hamburg.
I don't know anything about the bandwidth at NASA.
Finn, just imagine, in Germany you can basically do anything you want with the internet, with bandwidth. It all just somehow happens seamlessly. It's depressing.
Promises to, it looks like it's going to be fun. I was looking at the program last week, and
Well,
only 2 more weeks to go or something like that.
We do recommend people check it out if they're able to, ccc.de. And, of course, if you can't make it, I believe they're streaming all their talks live video.
Yes.
Because they have so much bandwidth. They have more bandwidth than countries, continents even. But it's great. I'm thrilled for them. I just wish our technology would catch up over here.
Oh, well.
All right, Bobson, great hearing from you. Anything new as far as you're concerned?
Yeah. Pardon?
Anything new from you?
Well, not as such. Nothing I can think of right now, but I'm looking forward to going to the Hamburg thing in 2 or 3 weeks. So That's it for now.
Okay, well, if we don't make it over there, please report back to us and let us know.
Yeah, probably. Yeah,
our correspondent over there.
Oh, okay.
All right, good hearing from you.
Have a great night. Thank you for a good show, and kudos to the IRC people who are, you know.
Yes, greetings to them.
All right.
All right, good night.
Thanks, Bobson.
631-632-6901. We only have a couple of minutes left, so if anyone else is out there wants to say hi or something, give us a call, and we'll try to squeeze you in. But, yeah, you know, those European conferences are simply incredible. And not only the hacking conferences, but all kinds of technology-based events. You would not believe the bandwidth, the computing power, the size.
Well, Europe is a different they have a different attitude towards these types of things, and we're way so far behind in all of these areas, as your listeners know.
Yeah, I don't mean to sound negative about it, but
we're negative about it.
We are negative about it because there's so much catching up we have to do. But it doesn't mean we shouldn't try, you know.
That's right. Well, it's a lot of lobbying effort. It's a lot of dropping of walls. It's a lot of all of that has to go on, and it's hard to do that in the United States, where there are many, many political powers that would like certain things not to happen and would certainly like those things to be controlled.
Yes, absolutely. Hey, I just got a news flash that that they may have reached a deal to avoid another government shutdown. Isn't that nice? See, there's happy news out there. Government won't shut down. I'm sure people in Deer Trail aren't happy about that, but yeah.
Yeah, I like that story. I like the that whole thing. Yeah, see, I'm very, as you well know, Emmanuel, I'm anti-gun ownership myself. But in that case, I think it should be free distribution of guns.
Or just something.
That's right.
Laser beams or missiles or something. Yeah, there's going to be drones all over the damn place. All right, let's see if we can squeeze this one call in. Good evening. You're on Off the Wall. Press the button again. Good evening. You're on Off the Wall. Can you hear us?
Yes. This has nothing to really do with issues you're discussing today, but
okay.
You're one of the political shows on USB that I just wanted to throw this out there.
If you can do it in 1 minute.
Sure.
Can you do it in 1 minute? Your time's running out.
I thought you said give me 1 minute.
No. You have less than 1 minute.
Oh, okay. It was just about those monkeys being held in the labs at the university. I wanted to know if any of the...
Wait. We don't talk about the administration that way.
Okay.
Do we? What, do we? Oh, we can. No, I'm sorry. We can talk about them that way.
You can because you were talking about that teacher last week. So I was like, oh, Eric Corley's show. Let me
athletic,
try to call him.
Yeah, the athletic director. Well, we did talk about that. And, you know, that story seems to have been killed.
Okay, all right. So none of the DJs are talking about these monkeys. It's on the TV, and the Newsday did an article about it.
Do you know anything about these monkeys?
I don't. You mean actual monkeys. What's going on with them? Tell us.
But you really have, I mean, it's your show, Finn. I'm kind of...
We'll let it roll a little bit.
Yeah, all right. Very quickly, can you tell us?
Well, I don't know too much about it, but it's a lawsuit being brought against Stony Brook University for holding these two chimpanzees. They were homed, and then they brought them back for some kind of research. And I just figured, you know, let me call one of these DJs and find out if they know anything about it, if they can speak about it. And that's all I pretty much know.
I don't have any chimpanzees on campus that are, well, I guess they're confined, which is why I don't know about them.
They're in their offices.
They're at the Division of the Laboratory Animal Research on the campus itself.
Well, there have been, yes, there have been all kinds of primates that have been held there in the past. I am aware of that. I wasn't aware of these particular ones. I'll look into it. I'll see if this is something that we can talk about in weeks ahead. But we are out of time now.
Okay, thank you for listening to me.
All right, thanks for your call.
Thanks.
And we have to move out of delay. And we're out of delay.
Whoa.
And we're out of time. Finn, thank you so much for stopping by. And I guess you're up next, right?
That's right.
Cool. Well, we'll be back next week. Hopefully there'll be more positive things going on. You can write to us, otw@2600.com, and we'd love to hear from you. It's Manuel for Off the Wall. Have a good night.
Thanks for listening, guys.
Hey, you out there in the cold, getting lonely, getting old, can you feel me? Hey, you, standing in the aisles with itchy feet and fading smiles, can you feel me? Hey, you, don't help them to bury the light. Don't give in without a fight.
Hey kids, this is Finn, and this is Finn's Revolution right here on WUSB Stony Brook. In just a few moments, Miss Phyllis Chen, toy pianist, going to be giving away some tickets to the festival all week. Some great avant-garde music in New York City at a reasonable hour that'll get you home early. And then Miss Tammy Faye Starlight sings some Nico for us. Stay tuned. In the background right here, Miss Phyllis Chen. This is a tune called Milam Per from her most recent record, Little Things. And we're going to be speaking with Phyllis in just a moment. You guys are going to get some tickets to a really, really cool festival in the city of New York this week. Stay tuned. First, we're going to hear a little tinkering of the toy piano. Yeah, so that's the great Phyllis Chen playing some toy piano right here in WUSB Stony Brook from her most recent record, Little Things. By the way, those of you who won them last time, the three of you, are all going to be getting your signed copies shipped out tomorrow. which is a very good thing. We finally got them signed, and they're on their way out tomorrow. But meanwhile, I got a chance to speak to Phyllis 2 days ago in her apartment in Astoria, right around the block from me. And we talked about her work, her Uncaged Toy Piano Festival, which is happening this week, which is absolutely wild. Great, great stuff. It's like a circus performance with great music. And we're going to give away some tickets to that right after the interview. So right now, let's join Phyllis in her apartment in Astoria, where she will entertain us with a little music and some wonderful little stories about her musical adventures. Phyllis. Hi, Phyllis. How are you?
I'm good. How are you doing?
I'm doing good. Thanks for having me over to your humble abode here in Astoria.
Yes, I'm glad you just came over, hopping to skip away.
And we're surrounded here by toy pianos and keyboards and all kinds of little banging things.
Yes.
And, all in your apartment as you get ready for the Toy Piano Festival.
That's right.
The Uncaged Festival this week. A few weeks back, we had a little special on your most recent record and gave away a few copies. And can you tell us a little about, well, tell us a little about your recording background, what you've, your releases.
Okay, great.
Bring us
yeah.
up to date.
Yeah, so that record, Little Things, is my third toy piano album that I've released of solo toy piano music. And it features seven different pieces that have been written for me in the last 4 years. And it uses a bunch of toy instruments. One of the tracks uses an instrument that was built out of clock chimes by Nathan Davis, and some electronics and other sort of gadgets that are really that just makes for, I think, a pretty eclectic mix of music. My first album was released in 2007, and that has I think the Suite for Toy Piano by John Cage.
Mm-hmm.
So the first piece ever for toy piano, two pieces that I wrote, and a collection of other pieces that were written for me that I would consider like canons of the toy piano repertoire.